That is the sound you never want to hear. It is the sound of a warning siren going off at a nuclear power plant. But whether you can hear that sound or not, we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly news magazine keeping you up to date on all things anti-nuclear. My name is Libby Halevi. I'm producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from 1 mile away. So I know what happens when the experts get it wrong. This week marks the 34th anniversary of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island. I will have a special report coming up, which provides the bulk of this week's program. I'll be recreating the events of the first 3 days of the accident, including input from nuclear engineer Arne Gunderson of Fairwinds.com, Middletown resident Mary Stamos, media clips including Walter Cronkite, interviews done at that time, and part of my own story in advance of my book, Yes, I Glow in the Dark. That will be coming up in just a few minutes. Today is Tuesday, March 26, 2013, and here is a truncated version of the week's nuclear news. Last week's nuclear hot seat covered at great length the mysterious power outage at Fukushima Daiichi that shut off power to cooling systems on 4 spent fuel pools and raised the specter of an extermination-level radiation release just in time for spring break. Shortly after we posted that episode, number 92, Nuclear Hot Seat learned that, according to Tokyo Electric Power Company, TEPCO, the problem had been resolved and power, despite how tenuous the connection, had been restored to all fuel pools after more than 24 hours offline. Phew! Now, TEPCO says it suspects a, quote, rat-like animal of causing a short circuit in the switchboard that may have led to the power outage at the facility. They say they found burn marks on a makeshift power switchboard last Wednesday and the dead 9 3/4-inch animal nearby. The actual cause of death of the... Why don't they freaking call it a rat and be done with it? The actual cause of the death of the rat is unknown, but the cause of the threat to all life on Earth, meaning the deadly remains of Fukushima Daiichi, is well known, at least to some of us. You know, the same thing happened to a friend of mine whose electric stove suddenly wouldn't work. A mouse chewed through the insulation around a wire, and the darn thing electrocuted itself. Isn't it reassuring to learn that a single hungry rodent can bring the world to an end? I feel more insecure about that makeshift nature of the power switchboard. Now, TEPCO says it plans to investigate further, while the Wall Street Journal opined the prospect that a small animal could trigger the blackout underscores the facility's vulnerability. Ya think? Another theory behind the accident holds that sand and or water got into the switchboard, which was stored on the back of a truck under a tarp. But not to fear, remember, TEPCO is investigating. Doesn't that just make you feel more secure? Meanwhile, citizen activists with radiation monitors report that a new radioactive plume from Japan came ashore in the Pacific Northwest in the wake of that power blackout. Radwatch.com reported on Facebook that spikes were registered in Seattle and Portland, Oregon. We'll keep you up to date on any developments in this story. We have a runner-up for numbnuts of the week before we get to the real one. Runner-up, the White House. It has endorsed a plan to relax long-held standards for cleaning up radioactive material released by a nuclear power plant disaster or act of terrorism. The recently completed draft report on radiation remediation suggests guidelines under which as many as 1 in 23 people would be expected to develop cancer from long-term radiation exposure. Apparently, the only thing green about this White House resident's proposal is the color we're all expected to glow in the dark. But truly, numbnuts of the week this week, hands down, goes to an ad for work in Japan posted by Fukushima Voice. This ad offers long-lasting employment at, wait for it, Fukushima Daiichi. The translated ad reads in part, "Women accepted. You can make money. We will let you make money. It is a job even women can do. This job will last a very long time." Side note, you won't last, your health won't last, but the job will. Back to the ad. Job location is Fukushima Daiichi Nuclear Power Plant with low-dose radiation, 10 to 20 millisieverts a day. Sounds like a bonus to me. Job description is cleanup activity. Age limit. Under consideration, but will most likely be between age 18 and 62. Boy, that really narrows it down. Truly, this is one of the numnutsiest numnuts of the weeks we have ever seen. We'll get back to the nuclear news next week. This week, we mark the 34th anniversary of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania with a special report. In the wake of Fukushima, we in the Movement for Nuclear Sanity and the media often refer to the nuclear accident that took place at Three Mile Island, which happened on March 28, 1979. But we really don't discuss it or even consider it in any detail. There are undoubtedly listeners to Nuclear Hot Seat who weren't even born then and who don't know much about this accident other than what they've heard so often. It happened, nobody died, big deal. And then if they're in a nuclear discussion, move it on to the more obvious horrors of Chernobyl or Fukushima. I can't forget Three Mile Island because I was there, literally 1 mile away, visiting an old friend who had recently moved to the area. The first day, I was able to ignore the accident by not paying attention to the media, which in the beginning sounded like this.
An accident in the water cooling system at the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, forced the company to call a general emergency and shut down part of the plant for an unspecified period.
A mere 2 days later, Walter Cronkite, known as the most trusted newsman in America, began a special report on Three Mile Island like this.
The world has never known a day quite like today. It faced the considerable uncertainties and dangers of the worst nuclear power plant accident of the atomic age. And the horror tonight is that it could get much worse. It is not an atomic explosion that is feared. The experts say that is impossible. But the specter was raised of perhaps the next most serious kind of nuclear catastrophe, a massive release of radioactivity. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission cited that possibility with an announcement that, while it is not likely, the potential is there for the ultimate risk of a meltdown at the Three Mile Island atomic power plant outside Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
But by the time this announcement hit the airwaves, much had happened that set the course for the accident, the bungled follow-up, and the trail of lies that followed. The accident at Three Mile Island began at 4 a.m. on Wednesday, March 28, 1979, with failures in the non-nuclear secondary system, followed by a stuck open valve, which allowed large amounts of nuclear reactor coolant to escape. The mechanical failures were compounded by the initial failure of plant operators to recognize the situation as a loss of coolant accident due to inadequate training and human factors. Arne Gunderson of Fairwinds Energy Education and a familiar, supportive presence to the anti-nuclear movement was a nuclear industry insider at the time of Three Mile Island. He has since come to be one of the world experts in exactly what took place and in what order. One big question he addresses is, should an evacuation have been ordered? His response is taken from a video on Fairwinds.com entitled Three Myths of Three Mile Island. Unfortunately, because of a band playing in the lobby of the hotel, the audio is compromised and unable to be used, so I will read from a transcript. These are Arnie's words. Remember that the accident started just after 4 in the morning. Arnie said, around 7 o'clock in the morning, an engineer and his supervisor, using an approved procedure, calculated that the exposure in Goldsboro, which was the closest town, might be as high as 10 rems an hour. This is a very high and a very dangerous level. By the procedure, an evacuation was required. At 7:30, TMI, Three Mile Island, called the state and told them that they had 10 rems an hour. The state was aware of that calculation showing 10 rems an hour. But Three Mile Island's position was that it seemed too conservative. They said that the pressure was not high enough. Well, within the calculation, there was no pressure dependency. So basically, they went outside the realm in a crisis situation, as opposed to letting the procedure govern how you should be working your way through. What they did not tell the state in that 7:30 phone call is that employees working outside had already begun to receive exposures. There is at least one case of an exposure of 20 millirem to an employee who is out on the grounds before 7:30 in the morning. They did not tell the state that already almost every radiation detector in the plant was off scale. They did say that a helicopter flew to Goldsboro at about 7:30 in the morning and found no radiation. Arnie went on to speak about three problems with that report about the helicopter. First, it was a very calm day. They will admit that the helicopter actually got to Goldsboro before the plume would have gotten to Goldsboro. So had there been radiation coming, it would not have gotten there, and so based on that, they said, well, there was no radiation in Goldsboro. That is problem number one. Problem two was that the plume would have been narrowly concentrated, and a 6-degree error in where they put the instrument would have resulted in as much as a 10,000-fold difference in radiation that they measured. Problem number three is that the helicopter actually arrived on site at 8:30. There was no helicopter at 7:30. So my belief is that at 7:30, procedures told them they should have evacuated, and in a situation like this, you do not try to change the rules on the fly. Mary Stamos is a longtime resident of Middletown, Pennsylvania. She lived and still lives only 6.5 air miles from the facility and was directly in the center of the trajectory of the plume, only she did not yet know it.
I went into the driveway, and it was really strange because the air was filled with metal, and I didn't know if I was breathing it or tasting it, but I just looked around, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And the thing that was really strange, it was a beautiful, sunny morning, and there were no birds when the birds were chirping all over the place the day before. And I just wondered, you know, what was going on, but I had no clue.
Arnie spoke about the plant manager at the time. He said, the plant manager was a guy named Miller, and here's what he had to say over the next couple of years about what was going on in that time frame. Every one of these quotes is referenced back to a reference document. Miller said, quote, they were hot enough to scare you. He was talking about the in-core temperature. He also said, pretty early we were scared. Radiation was all over the place. Everything was off scale. Arnie added, if you are scared, it is about time to at least tell the civilians that this is the time to move out. More from Miller. We don't know where the hell the plant was going, Miller said in a phone call to company headquarters in Parsippany at 7:30 in the morning. Arnie commented, it was pretty clear in my mind that Miller was suggesting we should go to a general emergency. What follows is a recording from a dictaphone that was accidentally left on and recorded what the people we count on in a nuclear accident sound like as they try to figure out what to do. The sound quality is not great, but listen closely, because the picture it creates is shocking and important for you to understand.
Operating totally in the blind, and I don't have any confidence at all that if we order evacuation, we won't move people to a place where they've already gotten a piece of the dose. They're going to get into an area where they will get another piece, you know. They will have had 0.5 of what they were going to get, and now they move someplace else and get 1.0. Now, Joe?
Yes, sir.
I think to me I've got to call the governor.
Yes, sir, I do. I think you've got to talk to him immediately.
Do it immediately. We're operating almost totally in the blind.
When they decided not to tell people to evacuate on the first day, that was the sound of my life being inalterably changed. They talked him down to a site emergency, meaning that officially, the problem was only at the plant itself and did not extend into the outside community. Again, Arne Gunderson's words. So Parsippany backed Miller down at 7:30. I think until 7:30, his heart was in the right place. After that, he changed his tune. One final quote from Miller. We were not in our minds convinced that the Corps was totally covered, to which Arne added, this is another indication that it is time to let the civilians know to head for the hills. But it did not happen. We will have an interesting postscript to plant manager Miller at the end of this special report. Arne Gunderson suggests that the next time that would have been a good time to have evacuated was between 10 and 11. Again, Arne's words. By then, they knew that core thermal couples, that is a device to measure temperature inside the core, were measuring 2,100 degrees Fahrenheit, when normally they would measure about 500 degrees. 2,100 degrees indicates that the fuel rods are entering something called a Zirk water reaction. Fuel rods are made of zirconium, and they scavenge oxygen out of water. So oxygen gets pulled out of the H2O, releasing hydrogen. So by 10 o'clock in the morning, they knew that there was hydrogen being generated. There was not enough cooling or no cooling going to the core. In a pressurized water reactor, they have neutron monitors in the core, but they also have neutron monitors outside of the nuclear reactor. And the neutron monitors outside of the nuclear reactor were reading very high levels of neutrons. That is an indication that the core had lost its water and was uncovered. Again around 10 o'clock, the radiation monitors in the dome of the containment were at lethal levels, thousands of rem an hour. Again an indication that fuel is breaking down. Around 10 o'clock in the morning, health physics asked the plant management to evacuate the auxiliary building. So all these things were happening, and yet the state was not told that things were really out of control. Arne Gunderson told this story from an email he only recently received.
Since I've been talking about Fukushima, I got a email that brought me to tears. It was a woman who was in 10th grade at the time of the accident, and she was in chemistry, and they were studying radiation, and they had a Geiger counter hanging out the window for the entire semester. They walk into the class at 10 o'clock on the morning of the accident, and the Geiger counter is pegged. So the teacher goes to the phone as a responsible citizen. He calls Governor Thornburg and tells him, look, I'm in Middleburg. I've got a pegged Geiger counter here. What should I do? And Governor Thornburg's office told this high school teacher, don't do anything. We know all about it. So they kept the kids in school. And who got evacuated were the kids of people who worked at the power plant. They all came by and grabbed their kids and got out of there. But the kids that didn't have the inside scoop wound up staying in Middletown and got high exposure.
At about that same time, Mary Stamos got first word that there was a real problem down at the plant.
Around 10:30 the morning of the accident, I got a phone call from my sister-in-law. And she worked for an environmental group, and there were attorneys there that were members of Three Mile Island Alert. And she said they told her that something had happened at Three Mile Island. The plant was shut down. They had some type of an accident. So I heard about it hours later after the metallic taste. I thought I was far enough away that it wouldn't be a problem.
At 12:20, the NRC asked TMI, what is the temperature in the core? TMI got back to them shortly thereafter, and they said, we don't know. The computer is printing question marks. That means that the computer is messed up. In fact, question marks mean that the temperature in the core was over 700 degrees. They did not know how high, but they knew that it was high, and this was another indication of a meltdown in progress. A couple of minutes before 2, there was a hydrogen explosion. Now, the industry will call it a hydrogen burn, but it was a hydrogen explosion.
It roared with a tremendous roar of releasing steam. It woke me up, and I looked out the window and I saw this huge column going up in the air and roaring.
plant manager Miller was in the control room at the time based on affidavits from four reactor operators. They all said Miller knew about it. The control room shook. Now, when your building starts shaking, I think that is about the last indication you need that you really should let civilians know to head for the hills. After that, it was unconscionable that an evacuation was not ordered on the first day. Of course, the official response from Three Mile Island officials was typical.
Everything is under control. There is and was no danger to public health and safety. There was a small release of radiation to the environment. All safety equipment functioned properly. Metropolitan Edison has been monitoring the air in the vicinity of the plant constantly since the incident. No increase in normal radiation levels has been detected.
The situation is more complex than the company first led us to believe. We are taking more tests, and at this point we believe there is still no danger to the public health.
We have absolutely no question about the safety of nuclear plants as a result of this mishap. We do not refer to it as a nuclear accident because it was not that. And as I say, all these systems went into operation as they should have.
So when is a nuclear accident not a nuclear accident? When the nuclear industry says so. None of the tumult going on within the nuclear reactor, none of the damage, none of the very precise information that Arne Gundersen provided was known to the outside world at that time. Mary Stamos.
The evening news had Walter Cronkite on, and I missed all of what he said, but I had heard shortly after that that they were talking about this nuclear accident at Three Mile Island. And then the next morning, my neighbor worked at the hotel near me, and she would come by for coffee, and we'd sit and talk. And she told me on Thursday morning, the second day of the accident, I mean, this is like 6 a.m. in the morning, that reporters were calling from all over the world to make reservations to stay at the hotel because of the accident. And, you know, we weren't told it was anything serious. The evening newspaper on March 28th said low levels of radiation escape after end plant reactor pump fails. Leak poses no danger to the populace. Later in the afternoon, Thursday afternoon, the lieutenant governor goes on television and says that, you know, the accident at Three Mile Island told us that there'd be no problem. They would be able to restart in a couple of days. And then later he comes back on television, like within an hour or so, and he says, we've been misled. We've been lied to. The nuclear accident is more severe than we have been led to believe. We were told to close our doors and windows. When I heard that, that's when I got really scared, because I had heard from bomb fallout victims, you know, the history and the story of Utah and Nevada and other nuclear places where they're told to close their doors and windows. If nothing is happening, you can breathe the air, but they told us to close our doors and windows, and that was Thursday afternoon, and I started to really get worried.
On the other hand, I wasn't worried at all. That's because I continued to ignore the media, dismissing the little bit I'd heard as an overblown response to that little problem down at the end plant. Of course, it didn't stop me from declaring myself as part of that very same media, a freelancer accidentally close to a big news story and wanting to capitalize upon it. The second day of the accident, as the reactors invisibly leaked radioactivity into the environment, I walked over a mile into Middletown, breathing deeply of the Pennsylvania springtime air. I stood around outside interviewing people, waiting for a bus, meeting my friend in Harrisburg, and then the two of us making our way back to the house, again walking the roads. The third day of the accident, Friday, March 30th, I was alone in the house working on a musical, coincidentally named Armageddon, when I heard outside the house the same warning that went down the streets of Fukushima. Stay indoors, close your doors and windows, and do not go outside unless you absolutely have to. Here's why.
It began at 6:40 this morning and lasted until 9 o'clock. Another unexpected and substantial release of radiation into the atmosphere from reactor number 2. It produced a huge cloud of radioactive xenon gas and radiation levels 10 times the amount considered safe for the general public to be exposed to in a full year.
The new information is this. The accident sent ionized radiation beaming through the plant's 4-foot-thick walls. Consequently, the metal shield that protects the nuclear fuel may have been damaged.
Suddenly, everything I had been made afraid of during the Cold War as coming from the Russians was threatening my life from only 1 mile away, courtesy my own government. There was nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. For all I knew, the radiation level was so high that, in effect, I was already dead. Outside Three Mile Island, all was bedlam and chaos. At least the reporters were on the job.
What's it been like here since Wednesday?
Conflicting statements from the governor's office, the NRC here, the NRC in Washington, and the company Metropolitan Edison that owns the plant.
There's been a severe communications problem getting information back to Washington. I was there.
I think we're very close to a chaotic situation. Part of it, I think, is a lack of credibility of what we're being told. Part of it's the confusion that's coming forth. I think it's inexcusable that we leave a private utility in full command of the situation. Being advised and pulled and tugged and fragmented by the structure there.
How can you say it's not an accident when radiation is being detected as far away as 16 miles?
The accident did not occur inside the reactor in the slightest. It was a feed pump connected to the turbine outside of the reactor area. Now, that was a failure of a piece of machinery, and therefore it was an accident it wasn't an accident, it was just a failure of a piece of machinery.
There's also a bubble in the reactor vessel that means that any change in the hydraulics of the core have to be carefully monitored. So we're looking very carefully at the way the applicant intends to get the core to a cold shutdown condition.
There's no relationship between that and what is thought of as a nuclear accident.
Mary Stamos.
The next morning, around 8:30 or 9:30, all of a sudden, I heard sirens ringing and the church bells were ringing, which I never heard like this, and all of the sirens were ringing in this area. And I turned the TV on. I didn't see anything. Then I turned my radio on, and I hear the newscaster, Ron Drake, talking about having uncontrolled radiation releases from Three Mile Island. And that's when I really started to panic. And a little bit later, the one person, I don't know who it was, we consider him a hero, he turned the sirens on in Harrisburg, and the people started to panic, and they were hearing all the news about what was happening. And then the governor, Thornburg, was kind of forced into talking about radiation, you know, and the exposure that people might be getting.
Based on advice of the chairman of the NRC, and in the interest of taking every precaution, I am advising those who may be particularly susceptible to the effects of any radiation, that is pregnant women and preschool-aged children, to leave the area within a 5-mile radius of the Three Mile Island facility until further notice.
And like I said, I'm 6.5 miles away. But I was still worried.
The whole idea of being able to evacuate communities that size is absurd. It's been absurd all along, and it's just governmental and utility nonsense to talk about being able to cope with a situation by evacuation because you're never going to get the people out.
We are advising the people on the basis of information, on the basis of a recommendation from the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, that they simply ought to stay indoors as a precautionary measure, you know, until they hear further word from us. It's that simple.
Yeah, a lot of people are leaving the Harrisburg area right now. My own family's on the way to New York City right now to stay with relatives. A lot of people, the gas stations are flooded, the banks were busy, people were withdrawing some of their money so they could get out of here.
I didn't have a car that morning, so I talked to my neighbor, and she said that we could go to her mother's house. So I got my son ready. I went to school to get my daughter out of school. And her teacher was really upset because she had children that she couldn't go get until all her children from the school were leaving. So when we got to the school, got my daughter, and then we went to my friend's mother's home. That was about 10 miles. And then my husband was still out of town. He worked at a telephone company, and when he tried to call, he couldn't even get through. The phone lines were so jammed.
I had the exact same problem trying to call out. There was this weird siren sound on the line that wouldn't let me get through.
Oh, wow.
My friends finally got through on the phones, which had been jammed with no lines available. They picked me up, and we evacuated to friends of theirs who were 150 miles away, which we hoped was far enough. I stayed there for the following 10 days and then flew out. Away from Harrisburg, away from Middletown and Three Mile Island. So I missed the community of people who together were able to process, commiserate, and get angry in a legal way at the powers that be at Three Mile Island. But I also missed the worst of the follow-up information.
When I got my daughter ready to go back to school the one morning, I was brushing her hair, and she had thick, lovely hair, blondish, and a whole lot of hair came out in the hairbrush, and it kind of freaked me out. I gave my son a little bath, and I saw a whole wad of hair in the tub, which I never had experienced before, and when I looked at his scalp, I could see his scalp, and it wasn't solid hair. And I didn't think a whole lot of it because I thought when radiation caused hair fallout, I thought you would be bald. I didn't know until a couple years later that you could just have a certain degree of hair loss. I didn't know what was going to happen to us in the future if we'd all get cancer or whatever.
Other problems noticed and documented by Mary Stamos include a sudden growth spurt in some of her plants, as much as 4 inches in less than a week. Mutated flowers, branching out into multiples that weren't supposed to exist, or growing a rose inside of the middle of another rose, but with no reproductive components visible, and 3-foot-long dandelion leaves. These are all evidence of a process known as fasciation, which are mutations following exposure to radiation. Fasciation has also been observed at Fukushima and Chernobyl. Animal mutations and animal deaths were discovered.
There was a lady at one of the first meetings I ever attended, the public NRC meeting. She stood up and asked a question of the NRC or MedEd, the Metropolitan Edison, the TMI owners. She wanted to know when they were going to pay her for her losses of animals. And she had a dog kennel or a poodle kennel. And her poodles was born with no eyes. It had eye sockets but no eyes, and she lived right down across the street from Three Mile Island. They paid her every penny that she asked for, but she was not allowed to talk about it.
Mary Stamos became and remains involved with Three Mile Island Alert. In the wake of the accident, finding out that there was no epidemiological follow-up, she and others from the group went door-to-door in the evacuation area asking questions about people's health. She was shocked to learn that more than 50% of the people within a 5-mile radius of the plant had moved within 5 years, though one can hardly blame them. One final story from Mary Stamos.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission and Three Mile Island would come and have all these meetings, and people would talk about their problems, and they kept insisting that radiation wasn't the cause, but they never once said what it would have been. They blamed the health department here and the government, blamed a lot of it on stress. I mean, I never had metallic taste before, but I had stress before.
I've never heard of an animal mutating because of stress.
As for the legal follow-up, in 1981, citizens groups succeeded in a class action suit against TMI, winning $25 million in an out-of-court settlement. Part of this money was used to found the TMI Public Health Fund. In 1983, A federal grand jury indicted Metropolitan Edison on criminal charges for the falsification of safety test results prior to the accident. But under a plea bargaining agreement, MetEd pleaded guilty to one count of falsifying records and no contest to six other charges, four of which were dropped. They agreed to pay a $45,000 fine and set up a $1 million account to help with emergency planning in the area surrounding the plant. Note that $1 million is approximately the profit on one nuclear reactor operating for one day. So it seems that MetEd got off really cheaply. According to Eric Epstein, chair of Three Mile Island Alert, the TMI plant operator and its insurers paid at least $82 million in publicly documented compensation for residents for, quote, loss of business revenue, evacuation expenses, and health claims. According to Harvey Wasserman, hundreds of out-of-court settlements have been reached with alleged victims of the fallout, with a total of $15 million paid out to parents of children born with birth defects. However, a large class action lawsuit alleging that the accident caused detrimental health effects was rejected by Harrisburg U.S. District Court Judge Sylvia Rambo. That's right, I kid you not, Judge Rambo. My personal journey back from the trauma that was Three Mile Island took years. Despite having retreated home to the opposite coast, Los Angeles did not feel safe. And at that time, I did not yet know about the San Onofre nuclear reactors just down the coast. For years, I suffered from post-traumatic stress, before we knew the term, compulsive overuse of alcohol and food, decades of denial and numbness to the nuclear issue, until Fukushima Mule kicked me out of my complacency. Whether from ongoing stress or directly from radiation exposure, my adrenals and thyroid were fried. The specific cause makes no difference. It all came from Three Mile Island. And I made the conscious decision not to have children, because nobody could tell me what chromosomal compromises I'd suffered and the impact on any child I might decide to have. Those of us who are vocally and visibly against nuclear are often put down as too emotional. Yet in listening to the chronology of human experience in the wake of that dangerous, almost devastating nuclear accident in 1979, do you honestly think you could have gone through it and not gotten emotional? Think about the fact that Three Mile Island is still there, as are 103 other nuclear reactors in the United States and over 430 around the world, including the damaged, still-leaking three-meltdown disaster in Fukushima and the deteriorating containment vessel around Chernobyl. Then think about the way the information following each nuclear accident was bungled, manipulated, blacked out, and or spun. Do you feel confident in the nuclear industry's constant assurances that their technology is perfectly safe and you have nothing to worry about? That's a decision for you to make. But I know that I don't trust anything they say. I left Three Mile Island permanently changed by forces beyond my ability to influence. When pro-nuclear forces state nobody died at Three Mile Island, I suggest that they have that conversation with my children, none of whom ever got born. So you might say that all my children died at Three Mile Island. We need to remember the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island and the fear that it generated, because that's what stopped the nuclear industry dead in its tracks for decades. People woke up, saw what was happening, became afraid, and then turned their fear into anger and outrage where it belonged, and then into action against the nuclear power industry. No new nuclear reactors were licensed in the United States from 1979 until 2011, when decades of pro-nuclear public relations and disinformation campaigns finally took hold, and a weakened, compliant media had no choice but to go along. As a result, the public has been sold a toxic bill of goods that nuclear is, quote, clean, green, and sustainable, when in truth, it is the most deadly form of energy generation ever invented. Consider that fear, because it is exactly what any one of us will be feeling if the sirens go off and announce that a new accident has happened at a nuclear reactor. I pray that never happens to any of us. The last thing anyone fighting for nuclear sanity wants to be able to say is, I told you so. But in truth, we are none of us safe as long as nuclear reactors continue to operate, generate nuclear waste with a half-life of tens of thousands of years and no way to dispose of it, leak tritium into the groundwater, and compromise our health and safety. The appropriate response to the threat posed by any nuclear reactor is fear. So feel the fear. Turn the energy of that fear into anger and use the energy of anger to fuel action to stop these horrors. What is at stake is nothing less than the future of life on Earth itself. Next year will be the 35th anniversary of Three Mile Island. The media has a hard time looking beyond a one-year anniversary of any event. Sometimes you'll get a five-year commemoration, then a 10, then if you're lucky, a 20-year, perhaps a 25. Well, 35 is a number the media is likely to recognize. So my proposal for all of us is that we start focusing on Three Mile Island, that we do more than mention it. We educate ourselves as to what it was, what it did to us, how much fear was generated, and what the results were. By year 35, March 28th, 2014, which happens to be a Friday, we just might be able to have a major nuclear ingathering to make our statement against the nuclear juggernaut and perhaps promote nuclear safety and nuclear sanity that will last, which means shut them down and figure out what to do with the waste. As a final thought, here's the punchline that I promised regarding plant manager Miller from Three Mile Island. After many years during which he was not actively working at a nuclear power plant, but he was involved with the various forms of testimony, he was assigned to another nuclear power plant, where he served for more than 20 years. Which power plant was it? San Onofre. Where at one point in his career, the former plant manager from Three Mile Island was put in charge of safety. You will note that according to statistics from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, San Onofre has the worst safety record of any nuclear power plant in the country. Coincidence? That's for you to decide. My thanks and gratitude to Mary Stamos, who provided her time and a wealth of documentation for this special report, to Arnie Gunderson and Fairwinds Energy Education at fairwinds.com, for their ongoing clarity and calm in the face of such nightmares. To Three Mile Island Alert, which continues working for understanding on the issues surrounding the accident and the reactors, and can be reached at tmia.org. Additional thanks and gratitude to Mark Kaplan, who posted Voices from Three Mile Island on YouTube and was the source of many of those great media clips. Adam Curtis, whose film A is for Adam, provided excerpts from the dictaphone recording. Links to both these videos will be provided on nuclearhotseat.com/blog for Nuclear Hot Seat number 93. John B. Wells provided the clip of Arnie Gunderson from his nuclear power special on Coast to Coast AM. We will link to that as well. And thanks to you for having the courage to listen, to consider, and hopefully in the coming days, months, and years, join the rest of us in taking action. I want to remind you that Nuclear Hot Seat is a completely volunteer operation. I know, I'm nuts. And if you would care to donate to help support the work, no amount is too small. You can do so at nuclearhotseat.com. Just scroll down on the homepage. We're going out on music again this week. An excerpt from Armageddon, the show that I went to Three Mile Island to write. This one, you get a chance to hear me as a really bad Marlene Dietrich impersonator singing about what my story actually was at Three Mile Island. Music by Grady, lyric by me. Laughing at the disasters is one way of getting even with the perpetrators. This is Libby Halevi of Heartistry Communications, the heart of the art of communicating, reminding you that we have all had our nuclear wake-up call. Now, do not go back to sleep.
only 1 mile from Three Mile Island, I had me a terrible date. It messed up my calm, it was almost a bomb, and the name of that bastard was Fate. Our girlfriend from Boston had moved and got lost in that small townish mania of South Pennsylvania. I needed a vacation, some crazed recreation. I called, she said yes, how could anyone guess that in 5 days we'd know what came to pass? When a nuclear power plant belched and got gas. Only 1 mile from Three Mile Island, I had me a terrible day. It messed up my calm, it was almost a bomb, and the name of that bastard was Fate. Oh, the day Fate intruded, I hung out quite looted, till hunger that bore made me run to the store. There the clerk told some stranger that there was no danger. There are no effects, say much worse than an x-ray. When I asked what they spoke about that day, she said nuclear plant goof, about 1 mile that way. Only 1 mile from Three Mile Island, I had me a terrible date. It messed up my calm, it was almost a bomb, and the name of that bastard was Fate. Well, quite unlike Nero, I stood at ground zero, a pawn in the terror of nuclear error. I stared in the mirror as madness drew nearer. This wasn't pretending, the future was ending. I stared at my face without surprise, just sadness to see the world's end in my eyes. Only 1 mile from Three Mile Island, I had me a terrible date. It messed up my car, it was almost a bomb, and the name of that bastard was Fate. Well, we left my vacation in evacuation and drove to a farm where the vault did no harm. It's the news on the telly, my knees turned to jelly, 'cause I learned from TV what had happened to me. While the government tells me I'm all right, what do I tell my chromosomes late every night? Only 1 mile from Three Mile Island, I had reached the buzzards. It messed up my palm with all of the palm. But the name of that bastard was anybody sing. Only 1 mile from Three Mile Island, I had me a terrible date. It messed up my palm with all of the palm. But the name of that bastard was Fate. It was Fate.